need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to what will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Tonight we have in the studio Bill Arnold, and across the studio George Fraser, and the one making it all happen at the board, Alex W. How are you, gentlemen?
Fantastic.
Good. Well, George, how are you doing?
I'm good, Bill.
Alex?
Great.
See, I want to just...
Ask us again.
No, I'm just saying, I want a little bit more enthusiasm tonight.
Fabulous, Bill. Glad to be here.
There you go.
How are you doing?
That's good. George.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that nice, Alex? A little enthusiasm? Would it kill you? A little enthusiasm?
Didn't kill me close,
okay.
Though.
All right. Georgie, tonight we've got part two, a sequel, and sequels are usually never good, but tonight's going to be the exception. I mean, Rocky II. Did you see that?
Is that Apollo Creed?
No, Apollo Creed was one.
Who was two? The Russian guy?
I think the Russian. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about Russia tonight. I want to talk about Dr. Rona Epstein, who's with us back by popular demand.
I read her book last night. Another big Saturday night at George Fraser's house. And it was good, though. I've got a lot of questions for her.
Okay.
Great
material. We're going to bring her on in just a bit. And if you did not catch our first episode with her, it was a couple weeks ago. You can get it on the podcast, which is on myfaithradio.com. And she will be with us in just a few minutes. George, tell our listeners kind of what we try to do on Real Recovery. We do try to give a step as part of the show's agenda. And tonight we're going to talk about step five.
Yes. And I suppose you want me to roll with that right now.
Well, why don't you? As I adjust this microphone, which is falling apart.
Well, step five is we admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. I think for us, Bill, the important distinction from 12-step groups and using Christianity, Jesus, as the highest power, I want to get forgiveness of my sins. I don't want to use this process just to feel good and I'm going to be okay with myself. It is appointed once to man to die and then the judgment, and I want to be on the right side of that. And the only way you can do that is by giving your sins to Jesus and asking him for forgiveness. First John says that if we are faithful to confess our sins, he is faithful to forgive us. And I want to do that. But I want to roll back a little bit. We talked about step four last week. We talked about resentment and fears. And one of the big parts of our program is prayer. If you're a Christian out there, we believe you're in recovery because your life should be different than it was before you met Christ. And we think everyone is in recovery. And so we want to have a program that we can walk out our faith. I was in church last night, Bill. I heard a lot of good scripture. The hard part for me always is getting it into my life, getting it from my head down to my heart and into the actions. And last week we talked about resentment and fears, and there's a couple of really good prayers in the 12-step movement. The resentment prayer, and that's this. This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry, thy will be done. I need to say that prayer because I want to get Christ's help with me so I'm not angry with my brother. I can't serve and love God at the same time I'm angry with my brother. And I need to pray for his power to deliver me for that. And thy will be done. We're here to do his will. He's not here to do our will. We're here to do his will. And if we're angry, we can't do that. And then the fear prayer. I ask God to remove my fear and direct my attention to what he would have me be. Take my fear and refocus my attention. I think one of the enemy's greatest tricks is to get us on fear so we get away from God. Love and fear don't mix. God is love. And so I wanted to clear that up after last week. And we do that, Bill. We get our list from our step four, and we go in and we admit to God and to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And really what our wrongs are is we want to be God. Exodus 23, I believe it is, you shall have no other gods before me. That's us. And so I want to have a clean slate when I come out of here.
Yeah, we oftentimes are not interested in a God that doesn't agree with us.
Wow.
What do you mean, wow?
It says a lot because that's where our own God.
Well, yeah, I mean, if God agrees with you, then you don't have a God. You're in charge.
Well, God created me. I didn't create God. But that's our problem is, You know, we want him to serve us, and that doesn't work very well.
You ever wonder if God created you Friday at 5? I just asked.
I think it was Saturday night, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of laundry.
A little bored, let's make George. It's Saturday night.
Yeah.
A little fun, you know?
But instead of laundry last night, you read Rona's book called Food Triggers, which we're going to bring Rona on in just a second.
It's a great book.
I read it also. It's actually a great book. But George, what is the missing piece in most people's lives? Everybody, you know, is out there walking around with lots of missing pieces, and I think as a result they have a tendency of self-medicating, whether it be food or drugs or alcohol or whatever other addiction that's out there. How do we close that gap? How do we say the missing piece in my life is now being filled by Christ? You always harp on how do we get that into motion. Do you have any insight to that? Or maybe Rona will in a minute.
Well, I think there's a lot of ways to do it, but the first one we have to do is acknowledge that what we're doing isn't working.
How do you do that? I mean, who wants to give up control and say, my life is in shambles, I'm screwing up?
It's a great question. I need to pray every morning to do your will instead of mine. And we get little clues on what his will for us is. Maybe if you're an alcoholic, that your primary purpose is to abstain from alcohol and help other alcoholics receive Christ. We take the problems that we have and we can glorify Christ by what he has done in us. A lot of people celebrate anniversaries with medallions and they might get asked, how did you do it? Here's the real answer to that. You didn't do it. In fact, you probably didn't even want to do it. And the fact that you wanted to change came from God. A dead man doesn't know he's dead. So let's give credit where credit's due. And we are here to serve Christ, not the other way around. And that's the big default for a lot of us, Bill. We want to do our will. Sure, we'll do God's will if it lines up with what we want to do. I need to pray every day personally for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today. And please fill me with your Holy Spirit so I can have love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, those things, because on my own, I do the opposite.
Mm-hmm. I love the way you just went through about four or five of the fruits of the Spirit.
Oh, I didn't get to self-control in those.
No, you skipped that one. That's kind of a biggie on this show.
Well, yeah, but it's tough.
Why did you leave that one out?
Well, you know, I was looking at you, and you looked like you wanted to say something, and I care.
No, I actually don't.
I'm supposed to love my neighbor as myself, which is tough, because I really like myself.
Yeah. Psalm 139, verse 23 and 24 says, search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. All right. Search me, God, and know my heart. That's a pretty vulnerable place to be, isn't it?
Right.
Be exposed like that.
But how do you do that? Do you just leave it up to him to do it?
What am I, the answer man?
Well, you're the one who you quoted the verse.
I know, but that doesn't mean I have the answer. I seldom have the answer, George.
You had a good
what
verse.
What I know could fit into one seat at Target Field, and it's probably not even going to be a very good seat.
There's probably a lot of snow on it right now.
No, it's probably, the view is obstructed.
Don't we need to line it up with what the Bible says?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We do indeed.
Because I can't really ask God, hey, you know, how am I doing on these things? You know, we've got a list of 10 commandments and how we're supposed to be doing. And how do you line up with that? I know for me, gosh, not doing too well. Need a lot of grace and forgiveness on that. And that's what we get in step 5.
Tell me step 5 again.
We admitted to God and to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And as Rona states in her book, you want to get these things down on paper. You know, we want to get into action, and a good action is to write things down. I want to get in the habit all the time of acknowledging God's will for my life and how I'm standing up to that. We make every thought captive to Christ, and how are you doing? And we need to pray for forgiveness, but also I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, not on my own, but mm-hmm. through Christ.
George, why do we continue to talk when we have an expert on the line? Why?
Because we're sinful.
So we're going to take a very, very short break. When we come back, we're bringing on our guest, Dr. Rona Epstein. You're not going to want to miss this hour. Thank you for listening to Real Recovery. We'll be back in just a minute. We're back. Real Recovery. Thanks for listening. Sunday night, 5:15. We're glad you're on board. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Alex W. on the board. So far, everything is working well. No glitches, except for George and me. But what do you say about that, George? We do what we do. Anyway, we have tonight on the program Dr. Rona Epstein. She is a licensed psychologist, certified addictions counselor, a marriage and family therapist, and an author of a book called Food Triggers. And we had her on a week ago, and we begged and pleaded her to come back for part two, and she agreed, which, George, almost never happens.
Glad she's back, Bill. Yeah, let's get to her.
Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Oh, we're very happy you're with us. George, I'm going to give you the first question. You go ahead. George Fraser, ask
George
a question.
George Fraser, right here.
Right here.
I wanted
right
to,
there.
I was reading your book last night, and there's a part to it that I really like, and it's at the beginning, and it says, you are not a freak. You are someone who's abused food. Do you find with a lot of people that you work with that they think of themselves as there's something seriously wrong with me, and there's no hope here?
Absolutely. I don't think I've ever met a single person who was stuck in compulsive eating and binge eating that didn't think that they were hopeless. I mean, just every day, even I meet people who, when they start to look at this problem, they just can't even control themselves with tears flooding down their eyes because they're just so beat up.
Now, as a therapist, what is the first thing you try to do with a client?
Well, I always try to meet people where they are. So I don't always just do one thing. It really depends on where. Sometimes people come in and they already know they have a problem and they're ready to roll. And sometimes people are just not even anywhere close to realizing they have a problem. So it really depends on where that person is. Some people are just coming in and curious. They're thinking maybe I have a problem. So we talk about it. Tell me the story. What's it like? You know, and then we decide, do we have a problem or don't we have a problem? If we have a problem, if a person's confused about it, I might educate them a little bit about symptoms and signs and ask them, is this you, to kind of give them let them take a look at themselves. We have an assessment tool that I use, a scale called the Yale Food Addiction Scale. And you can go online and get that, actually. It's just a questionnaire, and it asks you all these questions. Do you have a food addiction? You know, it asks you, you know, do you lose control? Are you eating when you're not hungry? Do you hide and sneak? And these kinds of things. And so, of course, if a person knows they have a problem, they're going to usually be already in tears before they've walked in the door.
And you meet them where they're at. At what point do you try to offer them some hope?
Well, I hope to give people hope right away. I think it takes a little while for that to happen. But, of course, I do want people to know, and I can offer to them. I have gobs of stories, including my own, of people who've changed and been set free. And I can tell them that it's possible. But, of course, when a person has been for years binging out of control and up and down the scale, and I work with people who have gone up and down 100 pounds, on more than once, and they are devastated. So when I start telling them that you could be different, they're going to be skeptical. And yet, you know, if they listen and they're willing to work with me, usually we can find our way through. And you know, if a person's willing to roll up their sleeves and get involved in the work, that it's not just, you know, people want quick fixes, but if they're really facing they have a problem, they realize there's no quick fix. So we have real work to do. It's not just, oh, here's the diet. We've got to change your whole view on the relationship with food and also your emotions and, like, the whole spiritual issue of, you know, returning to food for things that we need from God.
Rona, when people come into the office, and they obviously come in with a narrative which is probably deeply flawed about themselves.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And I always think when it comes to recovery from addiction, the narrative has to change. But I don't think people are very willing to let go of their narrative because they will always say things like, I've never been able to stay on a diet. I will never win this battle. This is just my lot in life. And it must be a tremendous amount of work and challenge to try to help people change their narrative.
Yes, you're right. Well, I think that's where the simple message that actually comes out of scripture that's commonly seen in 12-step meetings is one day at a time. And a person may not feel that they can do it for their lifetime, but most people can start to wrap their head around, I can maybe today, just for one day, I can do something that I couldn't do for the rest of my life. You know, and so, and yes, it is definitely a lot of the work of early recovery is just having faith and just even, you know, blind faith. You have no evidence to other than other people, but in your own life, there is no evidence and no reason to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely challenging.
I've always wondered, is there a craving period that people go through that if they could get past a certain point, that it's going to start diminishing their craving? Is there a window of, like, say, 7 minutes or something, that if you can just hold on and not let loose in those first 10 minutes or 7 minutes, that you might find you have the strength to resist?
No, probably for normal people, 7 minutes. I don't know. It could be years. But
really?
Well, you know, I think there's different theories around about that. Certainly what you're saying is sensible in terms of practical advice for somebody who's trying to curb a craving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think for a person who's a normal eater who doesn't really have a problem, just even change, go do something different, like take a walk or call somebody, brush your teeth, get the taste of your dinner out of your mouth so you're not craving more food. Go do something that could actually be tremendously helpful. The problem with food addicts is that the cravings are about so much more than food. You have, yes, foods actually can cause cravings. Like if you are eating a lot of like sugary and white flour, those kinds of foods, and they only like satisfy you for a short time, and then you have to have more, not too long after. And so it's a physiological experience of craving. And so if a person's trying to quit, they may experience pretty intense cravings that are purely physiological, even for up to 3 weeks. And so the 7 minutes thing would be breezy if that was all it was. But I actually have worked with clients, and I think this is more emotional than physical, but they've been feeding themselves so much food for so long that it could sometimes really take until they've settled down emotionally, which could take some time before the cravings really start to dissipate. And that's where really the therapy and the spiritual help and the support and just really seeking God desperately for that transformation.
I know in alcohol and drug rehabs, the psychological is a lot harder. Otherwise, you know, we could just send somebody to detox in 72 hours. We're, you know, heading down to winter.
Exactly.
And it sounds the same way in food. Would that be true?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so then we're going to get at causes and conditions when we dig down into ourselves, kind of the reason why we might do this. And I noticed in reading the book, there's a physiological piece that, kind of like drinking, you know, the craving, which has to be very helpful to clients when they realize, hey, I'm not some freak. There's a reason I do what I do. How do you lay that out for them?
Well, actually, I try to give them the science. There's a YouTube series called The Skinny on Obesity, which anyone can access just by going on YouTube. It's by a guy named Dr. Robert Lustig. And I recommend that people watch that because he does a really good job on explaining cravings in the brain, and he really makes the science simple so that anyone could understand it. So I'll recommend that people, and you don't have to be obese. I mean, anybody who's struggling with overeating would understand that it explains the whole issue of dopamine and the serotonin and how these foods are working on your brain, so that you can see that it is a physiological experience and that these foods are actually addictive, and explains the addictive process. So I think that takes it out of blame, and it really helps a person see that this is definitely something crazy going on in your body. There's all kinds of things that they need to understand. There's hormone changes that take place when a person keeps overeating and they're pushing their bodies to be taking in all this food, things start to not work right. The brain changes, and you have also the hormone system, where now your body doesn't even know that you're full because that system breaks down. And so, once a person can see that this is like scientific fact, all of a sudden you realize we're correcting a problem. And it does take the guilt and shame away from it. It really, I think, is very, very helpful.
you just got way too smart for us. Seriously, Rona, I don't even know what to say anymore. So we'll go to break for about 40 minutes. I'm kidding, Alex. I'm just kidding.
I like that, Bill. I think people, we have a better chance of succeeding if we know why we're doing something and why we did some things. Not that we're victims here. I don't see people who Bill and I work with that are addicts. You know, the victim card doesn't seem to work, but people, when they realize why they got where they are, all of a sudden they are empowered to make some changes.
Yes, I think so. That's where it has to start. You have to be able to see your weakness and your struggle. And it's hard to face. I think people don't want to, I think the magical thinking that I'm going to go on a diet and fix my weight really can take over a person to the where they're not realizing that they've done this 1,000 times and they keep falling on their face, you know, to get to a place of facing like this really isn't working.
I love the magical thinking. I know for me, you know, when I thought, well, you know, if I can quit drinking, I'll be okay. Well, obviously, years later, that hasn't proved true. But I see that in Christianity, too. We become Christians, and then, gosh, everything's going to be wonderful every day, and I got Jesus, and I'll just be joyful all the time. That's the magical, deluded thinking.
That's you living on Unicorn Island, George.
That's right.
Yeah. Down by Sprinkle River.
But that's, you know.
Yeah.
Don't you see that, Billy?
I do, yeah.
I mean, and so the magical thinking can happen even later in our recovery because you see people that stop doing what they were willing to do when they first started their recovery journey.
Mm-hmm.
How do we combat magical thinking?
Well, I mean, you know, it requires on my end as a counselor that I just help them to look. Let's take a serious look at the story here. How many times did we go down this road, and how's that going for you?
That's always a tough one.
Let's be real here. I have people do a history. Tell me about all your diets and how did that go?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, we've got to take an honest look. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have people go all the way back to early in their lives and do like an entire history from when they were little all the way up until when they come to me. And let's tell the story of where food played a part in your life and what, you know, where you found yourself abusing food, things that were connected to it. And when you start to really take a good look, you realize actually this problem has been going on forever. And no, it's not working to do it my way. So I think it's a little bit, I find my job oftentimes, because of the magical thinking, my job oftentimes is, even though I'm not like personally like the most confrontive person in this area, I have to really be confrontive because of the denial. You know, people are walking around in bodies that are breaking down from obesity and people are hiding in secret and missing out on family activities and they're not doing things because they're binging and they're so ashamed of themselves. And they, you know, one day clean and they think they're all fixed now. And, you know, I have to tell them, you are not out of the woods. You've been doing this your whole life. And we need to have help here. You know, I think there's that flight into feeling good when you have managed well for a few days and now I'm good. And then we forget to get help. We lose our humility and it's like over and over. So I have to kind of help people keep it clear. Like this is not working. And, you know, it's really, really hard to face that I have to, if I'm a food addict and I'm in recovery, I have to do things different than other people. I have to eat differently than other people. I have to have help for areas that other people don't need help for. You know, I have to be willing to go and be involved in a support group. And really, I mean, if, like you said, if you could just do the detox, that would be just fine. Thank you very much. I don't really want to go through all that. But, you know, we have to remember. I have to keep people remembering. Remember when the doctor almost took your toes off last week? Because you can forget in a week that you almost just lost your toes. And I'm not joking around. I mean, I have stories. I'm sure you do, too. If you're working with drug addicts, you know those stories of those people who just are living so close to the edge and just, you know, can't, because the addiction, they can't stop.
It's very powerful. And when you're around it, you appreciate the destructive power of it. And, you know, sometimes you're saying, hey, why do you not see this? But they don't, and we don't. I get deluded myself. I noticed in there in the book that you're talking about people in my terms, would be willing to go to any lengths. And you're talking about maybe you need a psychiatrist, and there's self-help groups that you name, and a nutritionist. I really like how you cover all areas, and it looks like you ask for a commitment from people that there's a right way to do this, and are you willing to do it?
Yeah, well, I just had a lady who came to see me, and she's an alcoholic who's been in recovery, and now she's turned to food, like typical a lot of my clients. And she came to see me about her eating, and she's had an eating disorder since she was tiny, and she's now about almost 50. And she wants to come in and see me one-on-one, and she doesn't go to meetings, to AA meetings, and she just wants to come and see me one-on-one for a daily abusive eating habit. And I basically had to negotiate with her. I'm like, look, you know, if you're doing this every day and it's taking up most of your thinking and you hate yourself and you think I'm going to help you in 1 hour a week, that's not going to happen. I can't help you in 1 hour a week. So before I'd even be willing to be her therapist, this is a lady who's been in IR. I mean, I kind of knew because she was already in treatment with one of my colleagues for her alcohol problem. I wasn't going to let her come in and play games. I mean, this is a hard problem to fix. And you can't just come in you have to have help all day long because you're faced with food and emotions and troubles and stresses all day. So if you don't have any support outside of my office, it's not going to work. She knew it, so she agreed. She said she would go to trust a program and come see me. So she knew. She knew what I was saying is right.
All right. Go ahead. We're going to just take a very short break, Rhonda. When we come back, we've got tons of questions. You listening to Real Recovery?
Yeah, sure.
George, Alex, and me are going to take a donut break. We'll be back in just a minute. And his head fell behind him as his arm. Welcome back, everybody, to Real Recovery. It's 5:34 on Sunday afternoon. Glad you joined us. We're talking to Dr. Rhonda Epstein tonight, and we had a caller the first time you were on, Rhonda, and she sent an email in and said was appreciative for us discussing other addictions besides alcohol and drugs. Her name was Susan. She said, Jesus may indeed be with us always, but so far I have not found him in my refrigerator. And it is a lot of work working this out, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It really is. And I think that habit of going to the refrigerator to look for comfort and a pickup, and that's just a common thing that people do. You know, not everybody's an addict, but we can all look at that in ourselves.
Mm-hmm. If I could ask about the landmines that are out there, I mean, don't we all have to better proof our homes to make it easier for us to survive? Certain situations and getting asked out for dinner and going to dinner parties, which George and me do not suffer from, getting asked to dinner parties, that's never a concern. Is it, George? You ever go to a dinner party?
I'm sure I did 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, perhaps. But, you know, things like how do we look out for landmines? How do we plan for situations that we find ourselves in where we go, oh, boy, they're serving brisket and that's it? So how do I eat smart now? Nothing against brisket.
Well, when a person is in food addiction recovery, they have a plan. And the plan is made together with a nutritionist or with a person in a 12-step program. And the plan really needs to hold wherever a person goes. And that is really challenging, like you said, because sometimes you're going to be out and about at party that you have to be at or you want to be at, and they may not have what you need. And this is actually one of the more difficult challenges for people that are in food addiction recovery because, you know, it may mean that they have to bring their own food or they may have to ask a person what they're serving and ask for them to maybe put their meal without the sauce and the breading, really depending on what a person's food plan is. I mean, we usually recommend not to be using white flour, and so a lot of things are breaded, candied this or that. You know, these kinds of things would be off of a person's plan. And so calling ahead to restaurants to find out or looking up menus And it's a lot of work. And it sometimes means actually putting yourself out there in front of people when you don't really want to tell them and you know they're not really going to understand. But one thing that a person has to grapple with is that if their life is being destroyed by food addiction, then they really have to ask themselves, do I really want to allow these social events or whatever, even work-related events, to ruin my recovery? Is it really worth it? Or do I just need to, you know, deal with what I have to deal with and take care of myself, regardless of what people are going to think about you carrying your own food or, you know, having to ask for special requirements. And it's a bit of humility. But I often say it like this. If a person had a peanut allergy, you know, at the restaurant, they always ask, that have any peanuts in it? You know, you do that because you're saving your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do it. You just have to. And so that's how people have to be. And I think, you know, we really have to look at that seriously. Like, well, can I go into that party and with a plan? And that means thinking ahead, what could potentially happen to set you up? For example, people who are food addicts, like, they get nuts about not getting their food on time. So let's say dinner is served at 9 o'clock. And, oh, now I'm starving and there's hors d'oeuvres and I had to have it because I couldn't wait, you know. So, but, you know, this is why calling ahead, finding out what's going to happen, making a plan and making sure that you know what you're doing so you don't get blown up by the landmines. Also emotional things that take place in these places. So a lot of people struggle with the insecurity of social situations, anxiety. And then they also may want to do something to make sure they keep themselves calm and sane when they're around people who push their buttons so that they don't have that as an excuse to eat. So there's a lot of things that people need to watch out for.
Yeah, there's a lot of surprises with landmines. What about time bombs, unresolved issues from the past? Sexual abuse, is that a big part of people that have eating disorders?
Yeah, actually, it is. As a matter of fact, I was just preparing for a class I'm teaching this week, and I was looking that up. There's a high propensity, actually, of people who are obese and have eating disorders that have been sexually abused, and other kinds of trauma, not just sexual abuse, but also neglect and other sorts of, like, being a child alcoholic, these types of things. People tend to turn to food early on to cope with these things, and food works. It does the trick. It calms you down. It makes you feel better, and it's like an answer to how you cope, and then it turns on you and becomes a problem.
So a lot of your clients have been doing this for a long time, and it's very ingrained into who they are and what they do. It's got to be very tough to just change that right away.
Very tough, because that's right, exactly, because all of life has been dealt with by using food to cope. And now I don't have the skills. I don't have the tools. I don't have the skills. I don't know how to roll in these situations, and so you got to learn everything.
How do you encourage your clients who've maybe been doing a behavior for 20 years and come in and expect to change it right away and they keep relapsing? How do you encourage your clients?
I have to repeat to them over and over again, this takes time. You're fine where you are. Like, people do get upset. Like, I've got a gal I've been working with now who she's been with me since, I guess, the summer, like maybe August. And she keeps saying, I don't know why I'm not better yet. I'm looking at her like, you know, she's almost 40 years old, and she's been binging since she was 5 and obese most of her life. And she wants to know why by August to March that she's not better. Well, she's much better. She's not overeating anymore, but she's still emotionally struggling and tempted, and it just isn't that easy. We just have to keep on reminding you, this takes time. Some people it comes quicker, and some people not so quick. I mean, if you're not used to feeling pain, sadness, grief, anger, fear, you're not used to feeling because you've been numb your whole life, then you are going to feel pretty intensely off the wall when these feelings start flooding you and you've never really dealt with them before.
And that can be very overwhelming. And I suppose what you used to cope with, you're not using anymore. So what do you do now?
Well, yeah. And, you know, so we joke. I mean, of course, a lot of the people want to go shopping. And then that becomes another addictive behavior. And of course that's, you know, and then you have to deal with temptations for substance abuse, which of course, you know, we recommend to be off all mind and mood altering chemicals. You don't want to do another addictive behavior. And the idea is to turn your life over to God, not to another behavior. And so it's teaching a person how to sit with your feelings and how to express them and use support and lean on the Lord and find comfort in his word and his presence and in the comfort and the love of people who God sends to walk the path with you. And you have to be willing. I think that's the challenge I think people have, is to be willing to let people walk with you through those valleys and those challenges of, and not being ashamed to, you know, admit that you're really struggling and that you need a lot of handholding. I think in early recovery, a lot of handholding, because temptations are heavy duty in the beginning.
Some of us need it in long-term recovery, too. I think we go through progress rather than perfection, but I'm kind of convinced, Doctor, a little bit that in recovery, we move from less harmful behaviors. Let's say eating, we might start exercising a little bit. Now, there's a danger there, too, but I know a lot of my clients in sobriety work out a lot. And maybe they played too much golf. That was a little autobiographical, but they're less harmful.
Too much bad golf, you should say, if it's autobiographical.
But
Mr. I can't make it 8-foot putt.
Usually
ever.
They should be given to
right.
me.
Yeah.
They should
anyway.
Be. But you know what I'm saying? I think we go from less harmful behavior patterns, because otherwise, you know, we kind of look at it, or we're going to, you know, join a monastery and be saying the Gregorian chants all day long, drinking water and vegetables. That's a tall order, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, actually. I do think you're right. I think there is sort of a weaning that it's not unusual to find some other, I've got clients who are always in my office saying, I was playing too many games on the video games and, just kind of numbing out, watching movies for hours on end. And, you know, they sometimes you just have to get, you know, sort of that's the way addiction goes. We just keep picking things up, anything to keep us out of reality. Until you get to the place where you can, you know, I think you grow into the ability to learn to be at peace with your own self in the world without having to find something all the time to numb yourself out.
And that ebbs and flows too, doesn't it? You know, we're going to have better days than we have bad days and good days, but we're not harming ourselves or other people. And that's a lot of progress.
Yes, it really is. It really is. And I think it's just part of the process of letting go of addictive behavior. It's just, I think it's some, it's not, yeah, I don't think we just jump into it. And I don't even necessarily think it's like sinful or wrong. And no matter where you are, to go and receive comfort from things that you find to be enriching. And so, you know, it's just when you're abusing it and when it's hurting you, then, you know, you should be careful.
Okay, we've talked a lot, and I'm assuming we've talked mostly about bulimia. What about anorexia? Is that the same type of deal, or what's the difference there?
Well, anorexia is starving, and the bulimia, you know, there's a lot of similarities between bulimia, binge eating, anorexia, and a lot of people who are anorexic have the other side. I mean, I work with people who one day obese, the next day anorexic, and they kind of get high on losing weight and on being able to have the control over their bodies that they have. Anorexia is much harder to treat. People love that feeling of being thin so much they're willing to die for it. And it's really scary, because you're dealing with a person who, when you don't eat and your brain isn't nourished, you're like the lights are on but nobody's home. And you're really looking at a person who can't hear you. And you really can't get very far until the person's fed. And that, and in most cases with anorexics, they actually need to go in the hospital. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I see more people having to go in and out of the hospital, because it's like one of those psychiatric illnesses that people don't want to give up. I mean, when you're bulimic, you want to stop. Nobody wants to be binging and purging. It's just disgusting and you hate yourself. But when you're starving and you're super skinny and you get a lot of positive feedback for being so thin, you know, that's something you can really get high off of.
Is there a physiological euphoria to that for not eating?
I imagine so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not really my area. I try to keep my practice to compulsive eaters, the obese and the bulimic. I've learned that's what I really like to do. I kind of stick with it. So, yeah.
All right, we're going to take just a very short break. When we come back, we have one more segment with Rona Epstein. We'll be back in just a minute on Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. It's 5:47. Welcome back to Real Recovery, everyone. Thanks for being with us tonight. 5:48. We are talking to Dr. Rona Epstein, and she is a licensed psychologist, a certified addiction counselor, marriage and family therapist, I believe, in the Philadelphia area. And we are having a wonderful hour. If you have not had a chance to catch it all, you can always listen to it on myfaithradio.com. It'll be podcasted this week, and you don't want to miss any episodes. These are award-winning episodes. George, when we last left off, you had a question for Rona?
Well, I have a new question.
That's what I mean. You had a new question you talked about during the break.
She talks about making substitutes, Bill, and I'm looking at the book. I think it's page 191 because it's right in front of me.
Food Triggers.
Food Triggers.
Get that on Amazon.com.
Excellent. Well, I had it given to me, so.
But you don't pay for anything.
No, I don't, but I would recommend this book highly. I got a lot out of this, and I thought I knew recovery pretty well. But you talk about, now that food is relegated in structured amounts to structured times, what do you do? And it says the possibilities are endless, and take a walk, read a book, visit a friend. What I like about that, Bill, is we're talking about an active recovery. We're not just sitting around waiting for things to happen. And how did you get onto that line of thinking about, you know, getting up and getting involved?
Yeah, it's your turn to do something. How did you come to that conclusion? Because that's brilliant.
I think addiction robs us of our life. I mean, it takes everything from us. And, I mean, it's time living is the solution. It's what God is the solution. But I think it's his will for us to live our lives. And there's so much to do, not just, you know, in the little daily things, but helping other people. And I think we're meant to have a full, abundant life. I think that's what's missing, is that we've chosen our addictions over life. And now we need to choose life.
I love that. At John 10:10, I came to give you life and give it to you abundantly. My favorite addiction counselor puts it a different way, and he says, I think you got to get out of your recovery what you were trying to get out of your using. In other words, I love getting high. I still get high every day by working out, hanging out with some friends of mine, you know, getting active.
Looking at yourself in the mirror.
That's a huge one.
Yeah.
That's a huge one. That was mean.
No,
do you counsel mean people?
No, it's not mean. You just, George has this great head of hair, which I'm probably jealous of, but it's not a big deal.
But I like that.
So I say stuff like that.
It's funny. Yeah. But I like the fact about getting up and doing something. A lot of the guys we work with seem like they're victims and they're helpless and they're hopeless. And we're not. If we have Christ, we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. And you got a whole list here of things to do.
Yeah.
Do people come back and go, hey, I'm having a better time in this behavior than I ever did before?
No question about it. I think once people start to get a hold of that and they actually start trying some things and having a little fun, I have actually a couple of gals I work with who are going to CrossFit now. I mean, you know, we're talking about some people who had a lot of weight to lose and just decided, I'm doing it. I'm going to go to CrossFit and do it, even though I can barely move. And the empowerment that's come with that, with giving that a try. And this is not about weight loss. It's really about empowerment. To just be able to do something to prove to yourself that you can. And then somebody who, you know, just finally just said, you know what, I'm tired of letting my weight stop me from living my life. I'm going to go out and do the water sports with my family when we're on vacation. And I don't care what I look like. I'm having fun. And I think there's something amazing about the shift that takes place when you quit letting your obsession about what you look like and the whole addiction to rob you from, you know, just get out there and start living. You start to find joy. And actually, that's, you know, I think that's sort of where the table gets turned in some sort of way. You know, there's obviously a number of ways that the tables get turned to the point where you're really free. But I think living is a big key. When you quit letting the things suck every ounce out of your being and you start living, it just changes everything.
Well, there's a little Romans 12 here where we're transformed by the renewing of our mind and we offer our body as a holy living sacrifice. And we can change what we're doing and we can hang around people that are healthy and doing things, maybe, you know, walking a race, maybe running a 5K. And you can change and see some results and some goals that you set. And you might actually like the person who's doing what you're doing. I mean, it's a great deal.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we have to
it is, and I think it takes you out of the problem and into the solution. It's like you're not
nice.
You don't have to spend all of your days just constantly focusing on what's wrong. And, you know, first it was the addiction that took over everything. Now it's recovery that's taking over everything. So now, you know, it's time to do a little something else.
I like that. I don't want to avoid use. I want to develop a relationship with my Creator so I can have the abundant life. It's not just about stopping a behavior. It's about starting a relationship with the Creator and living the abundant life, correct?
Yep.
And then you don't want to go back. I mean, I always say I'm in recovery. The day my recovery isn't better than my using was, I'm going to go back. My job is to make it better. And there's so many opportunities out there. The worst thing about a relapse for me is I would lose the life I have now.
Yes, exactly. I'm completely
Bill's
with you on
laughing
that.
At me over here. do we have, a show on mean people and judgmental attitudes. I should be on it, too. But, yeah, your life's got to be better, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. But, and you're right. Otherwise, why would you do it? But I do think that's a challenge in the beginning because it does feel worse, I think, in the beginning. And so you start to get some of this stuff going, and then you know, a little bit of joy comes, I think.
Delayed gratification, and that's a tough sell today.
We're supposed to treat our bodies as our temples. And they shouldn't be our temple of doom.
Right.
But I love
I
love the idea, Rona, that you just talk about the celebration of life wherever you're at, because you're opening yourself up to doing the kind of life that you should be doing. I mean, sometimes when I will watch sports on TV and I'll see some guy in the crowd, you know, with his shirt off, you know, with, you know, paint on his chest, and he's just having the greatest time with this horrible body. And I'm thinking, how can you do that? And the truth is, I'm kind of jealous that he can just get out there and have so much fun.
Right. Right.
I'm sure there's alcohol involved.
Right, it's true. And a little denial.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps. But still, they are kind of saying, I'm going to have fun. And I'm sure a lot of people avoid certain activities because they're too self-conscious of their body image and all that.
Well, most of my clients are in that boat. And
sure.
So I think it's great when they can encourage one another and try things together. A little something, get out of the house, because isolation is one of the problems that's related to the problem. And people binge by themselves and they hate their bodies and they don't want to go out. They're afraid what people think of them and they've been rejected and it's real. It's not like, you know, they've been rejected since they were little because of their weight and they don't really feel comfortable. And so to you know, walk that out and just change that, like you said, narrative and say, okay, you know, I do deserve to go out and enjoy myself, and I'm going to go and do it and risk people's rejection. And it's amazing how to change the way you feel and the world changes the way they feel towards you, too. I think when you have a different attitude, people respond to you differently.
Mm-hmm. I get people that when I go out in the summer, they point and laugh and go, should anybody be that white? So that's my problem.
Yeah, well.
I got a 3-month subscription, unlimited pass to a tanning salon, and it ran out just about the time it was starting to take.
Well, it's okay. You shouldn't do it. It just causes cancer.
That's true. That's true. So I'm off that kick now.
Yeah, good. I have a friend who worked in a cancer center at Penn. She scared me out of it. So
yeah. But George,
I suppose I got cancer now.
Well, you are in the sun a lot.
Just bum me out. Okay, I'm done.
You
now.
Went real quiet
yep,
all of a
I'm
sudden.
I'm out of here. Yeah.
Well, Rona, what can we do to thank you? I mean, you're just our favorite guest. You've just
yes.
been such a wonderful resource and such a delight to have on the show. We certainly want to say to all of our listeners, look up her book. It's called Food Triggers. And is it best to just go to Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon. It's on all the – you could go onto my website, which is www.foodtriggersbook.com.
Foodtriggersbook.com or Dr. Rona
yeah.
Epstein. You can look up Google either and find out all you'll need to find out. Rona, thanks so much for being a repeat guest because we
it's my pleasure.
You've been the best. And thank you so much.
Anytime.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Thank you.
And thank you to all our listeners. Thank you to Alex. Without him, we have nothing. And thank you, George, for another great show. Thanks
Billy,
for listening.
I would recommend this book for everyone.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Good night. See you next week.